This is the 91.3 FM Business Billboard. Regina Community Radio is delighted with the support of the following businesses.
There's a world-class spa nearby, a center for healing and relaxation. It's Sahara Spa, where skincare and treatment rituals are inspired by the famous spas of Bali. Heal and relax with hypnotherapy, massage therapy, and reflexology. Beautify with facials, wraps, scrubs, and makeovers. Group rooms like the Manicure Pedicure Suite are perfect for special occasions. Sahara Spa in Moose Jaw. Visit saharaspa.ca.
Western Litho Printers has been serving Regina and area for over 30 years. Western Litho Printers is well known for its top quality product, competitive prices, and fast turnaround. In fact, they can in most cases provide your finished product from file to print in 48 hours. No job is too big or too small for Western Litho Printers. 300 Dewdney Avenue. Call 525-8796.
This has been the Business Billboard. Thank you for supporting Regina Community Radio.
The countdown is on for 91.3 FM CJTR's Music Garage Sale. Right now, we need your donations. CDs, vinyl, DVDs, books, sheet music, instruments, audio equipment, anything musical. You can drop off your donations at CJTR during regular business hours, or you can call us 525-7274 for pickup. Keep community radio strong by supporting CJTR's Music Garage Sale.
This is the 91.3 FM CJTR Community Connection, brought to you by the Cooperators. When it comes to insurance, trust the Cooperators, connecting cooperative values to supporting communities.
St. Paul's Cathedral holding their 24th annual Strawberry Fair and Bazaar Saturday, May 5th from 8:30 a.m. to 2 p.m., featuring an assortment of baking, books, a deli, and much more. It's happening at 1861 McIntyre Street. Admission is by donation, and if you'd like some more information, you can call 522-6439.
If your nonprofit organization has an event Regina should know about, Call us at 525-7274. Community Connection, brought to you by the Cooperators, a better place for you, connecting community needs to affordable solutions. 91.3 FM, CJTR, Regina Community Radio. Our programming is made possible by community-minded institutions like the University of Regina and by listeners like you.
The views and opinions expressed in this program are not necessarily shared by Radius Communications Incorporated, operators of 91.3 FM, CJTR.
Dignity,
security, freedom,
freedom,
respect,
justice,
equality,
equality,
remedy,
succession,
fairness,
fair trial,
citizens,
right,
will,
peace,
movement,
movement.
This is my mistake, and let me make it good. I raised the wall, and I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum,
identity,
family,
home,
conscience,
expression,
expression.
Expression,
expression,
participation,
democracy,
welfare,
work,
work,
leisure,
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 health,
education,
culture,
culture,
human rights,
Charter Dana,
solidarity,
responsibility.
Fill in the mortar. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good day to our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM, and welcome to everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings.
We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a global collection of musicians. I'm Jim Hutchings, and joined by my co-host, Mona. She just got here in a great rush, and we're going to give Mona a chance to catch her breath. I've got to carry on here and tell you that Thursday, April 19th, was the evening of remembrance for the victims of Holocaust during World War II. Human Rights Radio was pleased to be in attendance at this memorial service in Regina. We are honored and grateful to have Rabbi Jeremy Parnes of the Pearl and Max Herman Center on our show today. Rabbi Parnes will join us in conversation about the Holocaust. Our discussion will include information about some of the history leading up to the mass arrests, murders, and deportation of the European Jews and other minority populations to concentration camps. The discussion will explore the resilience of the survivors and why it is important to remember those events in ceremony and storytelling. And I thought what we'd do is play the last couple of minutes of a presentation from that evening by Edwin Black. And Edwin talked about the Holocaust in terms of the participation of IBM, the company we know as IBM International Business Machines, in the logistics of accomplishing what went on during the Holocaust. So I'll just start that up here now, and we'll carry on once we finish that.
And it's been 10 years, and IBM has never answered, defended, denied, or addressed the fact that it co-planned and co-organized all six phases of the Holocaust. Now, why did IBM do this? Was it because, like Henry Ford, they hated the Jews and wanted to inspire Hitler with the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, which is what he did? No. Was it like General Motors, who believed in the fascist state and who built the Blitz truck for the Blitzkrieg and motorized Nazi Germany and stationed the spare parts along the Polish border and built Ju-88 bombers to bomb the Canadians and the Americans and landmines and panzers and torpedo head explosives? No, it wasn't because they idolized the Third Reich. When IBM put a new subsidiary into Poland, it wasn't because they hated the Polish people. When they put a new subsidiary into Holland, it wasn't because they hated the Dutchmen. When they facilitated the development of the V rockets destined to hit downtown Manhattan, it wasn't because they hated New Yorkers. For IBM, it was never about the Nazism. It was never about the anti-Semitism. It was always about the money. Because when it comes to IBM, business was their middle name. So, when the Jewish community here, in their ceremony, says never again, there's an undercurrent. There's an asterisk. There's an appendix to that lament. And it is, never again should we allow any company to use its innovation, its technology, its political connections, its power, its clout, its connections to afflict innocent civilians.
And that was how Edwin Black wrapped up his presentation to the assembled on Thursday, April 19th. And on that note, welcome, Rabbi Parnes.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
We are very delighted to have you here. And we're delighted to have our listeners back on Human Rights Radio. As Jim mentioned earlier, if you've just tuned in, our show today is focusing on the Holocaust because last week was the memorial service, and this is a global initiative, isn't it?
Yes.
And all over the world, I won't use the word celebration. I might use the maybe celebration of life of those who survived, celebration of lessons learned.
Commemoration, perhaps.
Commemoration is probably a better word, of the Holocaust. So I would like to welcome you and ask you, first of all, Rabbi, to give us a little bit of information about your past. You're the rabbi of the local synagogue here in Regina, and we don't know much about you other than you're a fantastic guy, I think.
I didn't pay you anything to say that, which is
no,
really
you didn't.
Helpful.
I know. The only thing I really know is that you've done some community development work.
Yes.
Because you spoke at the Unitarian Center a few years ago. So tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Sure. I was originally born and raised in London, England, a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
My family come from Jewish ancestry, so my family going back as long for many, many generations is a Jewish family. My father's family came to England from Belarus when it was part of Poland, before it became part of the Ukraine. And my mother's family were from Berlin. My mother's family's name, which was Hirschman, was changed when they came to England in order that they might better and more easily get work, because it was too German. The German name was too Jewish.
Right.
And so by becoming Hersham, they could more easily become... It was anglicized somewhat.
Okay.
And Parnes is my father's name, and we changed that to Parnes. Again, a way of anglicizing it, make it less obvious. And that allowed us, our families over the years, to get work there. One of my family members, my mother's brother, his wife, rest her soul, was her family's from Belgium.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a Holocaust survivor.
Okay.
And I'm not sure if the words Holocaust survivor is a... In this case, anyway, is accurate. Her health suffered always. I know that she was always having issues physically, and I know that for sure psychologically she had issues as well, bouts of depression and so forth. And she died relatively young, in my terms anyway. She was my godmother, and I loved her dearly. But it was a tragic reality, and I've seen many who have suffered that way and continue to suffer. So even for many, the survival of the Holocaust is a question mark in many ways.
I think that's a very good point. People who have gone through trauma, physical trauma, emotional trauma, survival is sort of up in the air as to whether or not it's a healthy survival, whether it's a joyful survival.
Right. Yeah. What do we mean by survival, in other words?
Right.
Is it simply
the
ability to continue to draw breath, or is there a quality of life that should be considered in this process as well?
Exactly.
So that's my family roots.
Mm-hmm.
And I was born and raised in London, as I say, in Jewish schools. I went to a Jewish boarding school.
Mm-hmm.
And then got involved in community work. I was a social worker for a while.
Yay for social work.
And I loved doing that, and I specialized in low-income housing initiatives, and was involved in some really interesting, what was then cutting-edge concepts, which actually are still cutting-edge
today. Oh, maybe we could use some of that information here in Regina.
I would be delighted to share that with you, because there are ideas that we were able to engage in community in low-cost housing that I have never seen since.
There actually is an initiative out right now of a number of people in our community that would probably love to hear from you on that.
Okay, we can talk.
Yes, we will.
Let me bring that into context. So when I, at some point, I left England, I ended up leaving community social work simply because I needed to earn a living at some point so I could move out from the family home and find a place to live and be, you know, start my life in that respect. And so I ended up going into sales and sold encyclopedias door to door and all that other good stuff.
You know, to think that a social worker would have to leave social work and go and sell encyclopedias to make money, I don't think things have changed that much.
I doubt it. I am sure they haven't. So we have much to learn and a long way to go yet. But anyway, so that's what I did, and I got involved in the business world and ended up working for a retail sales company in London. And from there, I traveled with them and lived for a while in Germany and in Holland and opened up shops for them, which was great fun and very exciting, as much as I really didn't understand the business side of commercial sales. I did well with it regardless. It was a sort of an unconscious competence that I found to be very troubling, and at some point I had to get out of it because I couldn't stand not knowing what it was I was doing right, because when I do it wrong, how do I rectify it? So I got out of that, and but eventually just kept traveling, and I loved to travel, so I traveled all of England, and as I say, did some travel in Europe. And from there, I was offered a position on a holiday in Toronto to come work in Toronto. So I took the job and very quickly moved from there into another business environment. And that business environment was where I grew to the point where I was transferred out of the London area. I moved from Toronto to London to run a territory for this corporation. And from there, they invited me to take over an office. And the plan was I was going to Calgary. And they said, well, we got a problem in the Prairie region in the Regina office. Would you mind going to Regina just for a year or 2 years, and then we'll move you to Calgary? And I said, sure, no problem. So I experienced coming to Regina. I worked for the company another year, and then I left the company and stayed in Regina. And I've been here ever since, 27 years. 13 years ago, the rabbi in our community, rest his soul, a few years ago he passed away, but then the then rabbi in our community worked here for us for 2 years. and they were from New York, and his wife could not stand living in Regina. She needed to get back to the big city life of New York, and that I understand. And so he handed his notice, and a couple of us in the community continued, because we learned with him how to lead services and mm-hmm. do some things like that. So we continued to lead the services until we found a new rabbi. A search committee was formed, and we tried out a number of rabbis that just didn't work for us. And while that was going on, I was continuing to do this with this other gentleman. And at some point, one of the presidents, the then president of the community, said to me, if you made us an offer, we'd be interested. So I provided them with an offer for a part-time contract
mm-hmm.
As the sort of lay leader, spiritual right. leader, until such time as we did get a rabbi.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 years after that, they stopped looking for another rabbi. And I was just it. And that was 13 years ago it all started. In that respect. And 7 years ago, a rabbi in Winnipeg said, stop messing around and go become a rabbi.
Get serious about
yeah,
this.
Exactly. Yeah. And I actually was interested because after doing it for so long, I realized that somehow this seemed to be what I should be doing. And I'm not sure how to explain that. I certainly had never designed, planned, or expected this to happen. It couldn't be further from my sort of world plan mm-hmm. of my life, but it works when I'm doing it. I seem to be in the right place somehow.
Sometimes we end up learning what we're supposed to be through the back door. I think that happened with me as well.
You know, the rabbi of my seminary, Reb Zalman Shachter Shalomi, likes to say that one never knows when God will call or how the call will come.
Mm-hmm.
But just be ready and get on with it.
Yes, be ready. Be ready for those opportunities.
Yeah. So eventually I woke up to that and mm-hmm. I decided it would be the only responsible thing to do would be to learn enough to actually do the job. So.
Right.
That's my
Well, that's
history.
Wonderful. That's a great bio. I think it's fascinating. And now that you're in this position and now that you're sort of happily ensconced and hopefully will stay in Regina for a while, because I know that you're well-loved, when you have your services yearly to talk about the Holocaust and to commemorate those who have been lost and those who are still here, and what's your criteria? I know that this year you had Edwin Black, who is a New York Times award-winning author who does research on the Holocaust and has written his book, IBM and the Holocaust. And that was an incredible, incredible service. And what's your criteria? Last year, I think, was it last year or the year before, you talked about the train. There was information about the train.
Transport.
The Kinder transport.
Right.
Yes.
And so what we did was we had a movie, mm-hmm. and it just so happens that one of the members of our congregation is was on the Kinder transport.
Yes, and that was a woman, wasn't it,
yes.
who talked about her experience at the end.
Yes.
Yeah, and that was so incredibly powerful.
Yes.
What's your criteria? How do you find ways to do this that you feel will be have that power and still speak to the people who are there, speak to the young people, to those who may have been there at the time who are here in Regina? How do you do that?
Well, through a number of avenues. So, for example, this particular presentation was made in concert with and with the partnership with Saskatchewan Jewish Council, which is involved in small community initiatives from time to time and of this nature. And so they might come to us, the person who looks after that position. And I'm not giving names right now because I'm not sure if
That's
it's appropriate
fine.
Or not. So
That's
I don't
fine.
Want to
That's
presume
okay.
for them, but they are appreciated. And they might come to us and say, look, we want to do this. And what do you think? Or they may not. And we may look at something and I may come up with something or someone else will say, let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, last year's initiative to have to show the movie in Israel, it's not uncommon for communities and groups to get together and watch a movie that's strongly connected in one form or another to the Holocaust. And so I thought, what a great idea, because we've got a number of Israelis who have moved here. From Israel, and so I thought it would be nice to connect with them that way, and it would be good for us.
Mm-hmm.
And to have someone here who can speak to the Kinder transport as well really made it an interesting program. One year we had the art of the Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
We had the children's play and opera of the Holocaust one year. We've done a number of different things. And we also are able to engage and are grateful to be able to engage a number of our young adults and our not-so-young adults, not-so-young, they're still young, but they're working now, and they're not just at college or whatever,
right.
Who have been on the March of the Living.
Talk about that, will you?
March of the Living is an initiative where young adults will go on a march. So they go to Poland, they'll go to Auschwitz, they'll experience the history of that place and that time for a period of about a week, I believe it is, and then they will get on a plane after that and go to Israel and spend a week in Israel.
Okay.
It's a very powerful experience for them. And we will ask them afterwards to, or they may have gone to the on the Taglit trip. I'm trying to think of the English to that, but they get a birthright where they have the opportunity to, if they've never been to Israel, to go on a trip to Israel.
Okay.
And do a tour and meet some high-ranking people, usually the prime minister or the president.
Okay.
And we will often call on them. One year we had a program where students who went on the March of the Living came back and they had pictures and made a slideshow and made a presentation on their experience. Almost every year we have representatives who have been on these programs come and open the program by lighting the six memorial lights.
What's the significance of six?
6 million Jews were exterminated, right. Were murdered in the Holocaust. Each candle represents 1 million of those souls that were lost to us.
When you talk about youth, I was thinking about that when we were at this service this year, and I was watching the youth take part in it. And I'm going to maybe play a little devil's advocate. We have 5 minutes till the break. And this is for purposes of those who maybe don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
On Human Rights Radio, we've done a lot of work and many shows on First Nations and Indigenous human rights violations and residential schools. And one of the things that people are constantly saying who maybe don't understand the context and the history of what residential schools has meant to our First Nation people is, why are you rehashing this over and over? Get over it and move on. It's in the past. It's done and over. And I would pose the same question to you, as I say, as a devil's advocate, in terms of why are you doing this and why are you bringing the youth into it? Why can't the youth just move on and move into society and be like everyone else? And why do they have to keep doing this over and over and over again? Because this is a question that people who don't understand the history have been heard to ask.
Absolutely. And they're absolutely right. Why don't we just get over this and get on? The reality is that human nature is such that if we do not remember this, it will happen again. Having said that, it almost sounds hollow in my own ears, because regrettably, as much as we bring this to the front, it continues to happen anyway. And maybe that's the other message that needs to come through, especially on this program. What about Rwanda and what happened there with the Hutu and the Tutsi? What about Darfur? What about Sudan? What's going on today around the world that we are letting it happen?
Yeah.
Because we move on and we just get on with it.
Yeah.
You cannot forget this. You must not. It will happen again to us. The anti-Semitism of the world is starting to rise again.
It is happening. Yeah.
Whatever the reason, and those are things that we need to talk about as well at some point. But the reality is, it's not just us.
Mm-hmm.
There are many others who also suffer. And I think that that's one of the messages that when I'm teaching Holocaust studies, for example, or when I start to speak to students about what happened with IBM's, not complicity, implicit involvement in making possible what otherwise would not have been possible.
Mm-hmm.
I want to connect that to something that's much more real for them. And I think that's the real point. To have a Holocaust memorial service for our community is very powerful, very necessary. We will do it. When we can bring people in, when we can show evidence of how this works and how this can therefore happen to you or me today, that's even more important, because that reaches to a much far-reaching group of people, audience of people that need to know this.
Right. And when you say community, we are our community. I feel as though I am a part of this community because we all come from the same place. So for me, it's personally, it's very important as well. And that's why I come every year to honor those people. And when we come back from the break, which we're going to take in a minute or two, I'll give you a little bit of my personal history and as to why this is so important to me. So thank you for that response, and I agree with you. It's incredibly important. The Truth and Reconciliation councils that have been set up, for, as you mentioned, Rwanda earlier, and for First Nation people here in Canada, I think that it often, that I believe it's been a mistake. I believe that those who have exhibited or who have committed heinous crimes against other people through a Truth and Reconciliation process tend to get away with it. So take it away, Jim, and we'll come back after the break with Reverend Jeremy Parnes speaking about the Holocaust.
I'm just going to take 1 minute here to just touch on the Look and Listen lottery, which is just about winding up for CJTR. The draw date is May the 4th, and there are just a few tickets left. And in fact, if you want tickets, you'll have to contact the office, because I think most of them, the money and the tickets have been returned. We still have a few tickets here at the office, and we're looking at a grand prize of a trip for two to New York City, a second prize of a $1,000 travel voucher, third prize of a weekend getaway at Moose Jaw's Temple Gardens Mineral Spa. Tickets are $20 each, and I'm not sure how many we have left, but well, the rabbi has just put $20 down, so that's one less ticket for you to buy. So if you're going to purchase a ticket, you'd better get here fairly soon. So we'll be back right after the break, and we've got some great music to listen to out of that.
Thank you.
And that was John Williams' composition theme from Schindler's List, and was played by, I'm going to do my best with the pronunciation here, Bozo Paradzic, playing the double bass, which is quite remarkable. I'm used to hearing string solos played in that register on a cello. And so the double bass is quite interesting. And he was accompanied by Hans Jacob Steimler on the piano. That was a live performance from Berlin on the 6th of October, 2010.
Welcome back to Human Rights Radio. This is Mona Hill, and I'm here with Jim Hutchings. And we are graced by the presence of Rabbi Jeremy Parnes, and we are discussing the Holocaust, and we're discussing the memorial and the commemoration and a little history. So welcome back.
Thank you.
Before we left for the break, we were talking about why do we have a need for a commemoration? Why do we need to continually remember? And I think you gave us a wonderful response to that, that if we don't remember, if we don't continue to have remembrance services and educate the world, then it's going to be repeated. And the unfortunate fact that so many similar things are happening, maybe in a different way nowadays, but similar things are happening to other populations in the world. And generally, it's why does that happen? What's behind it all? You know, in the case of what you talked about earlier, with a corporation like IBM actively searching out contracts with Nazi Germany, during the war, and that started before the war, actually, didn't it? And becoming involved for profit.
That's right.
And that's not. And we all know that that's occurring regularly. There's a lot of indigenous populations in this world that are being destroyed because of mining companies, even, and it's all for profit. I wanted to get back to and tell you a little bit about my history and why this show is so important to me. When I was a little girl in the north end of Winnipeg, which was a very, very diverse population of people who had come after World War II, who had left Europe, after World War I, who left Europe for safety's sake, to have a better life. And I grew up with kids whose parents came from Germany, came from Poland, from Czechoslovakia, from Ukraine. And so that was my little neighborhood. And I loved my neighborhood. I loved everyone. And every corner, every single corner almost, or every other corner had a little store. And a family lived above that store. And for the most part in my neighborhood, they were Jewish people. And when I was a little girl, I wasn't aware of this. And what I remember was going to the corner store with my little nickel, you know, or my pop bottle, and walking in and having Eva, the lady who ran the store, who lived upstairs with her beautiful daughter by the name of Bella, who was just going into junior high, and her little girl. And Eva would laugh with me and give me candies and give me a little bag of penny candies. And sometimes she'd say, oh, I'll give you an extra one today because you're such a cute little girl. And we would talk and laugh, and she would tell me about her daughters. And one day, I was in the store, and I saw something that confused me, and I went home, and I said to my mom, why does Eva have numbers on her arm? Mm. And that was the day that my mother, in her incredible wisdom, sat me down and told me in a way that I could understand that there were people in the world who other people didn't like for whatever reason. It wasn't because they were bad people, but that they had escaped from these people and that they had been through a terrible, terrible time. And then she told me a story. She said, you know, Mona, when I was a little girl, when I lived in Toronto, I remember going to the beach. And there were signs on the beach that said Gentiles only. And I didn't know what a Gentile was, and I didn't know what a Jew was, but I talked to my mother about it. And she said, and then I met some cousins who were talking one day at dinner about the Jews, and they were making very disparaging remarks. And she said, I looked at my cousin and I said, I'm surprised that you would say something like that because, you know, we're part Jewish. And I said, really, are we? And she said, no, we're not. But she said, I felt it was important to wake them up. Mm. So this was my beginning
in North End, Winnipeg. My beginning was going to school with a couple of kids that came to our school who were Jewish heritage, and one of the girls that I played with said to me one day, "Are you a Gentile or a Jew? My mom wants to know." And I said, "I don't know." "Okay, then you can come home and play with me." Mm-hmm. So that was my introduction, and I spent many years as a young girl into my early teens going to the YMHA rather than the YMCA, which was the Young Men's Hebrew Association, because I went with Frances and her cousin Ralph, and I lived this incredible life of seeing a different culture, of seeing families happy together in a different way than what I was used to on my street with other people. And all my life I spent, once I started to be able to read enough to understand adult books, was spent reading everything I could possibly find at my local library on the Holocaust. So for me, this show is so incredibly important, and going to the memorial services every year is so important, because I learned those stories from my friends in the neighborhood. And so if you want to take it from there, and whatever commentary you'd like to make on that. Because I'm getting teary-eyed here.
That's powerful. I mean, it is. And I hear many stories like this on an ongoing basis. It's interesting to me. It's interesting to me on so many different levels. But I always wonder about it. I mean, the thing that I'm left with always is ultimately an inability to comprehend. You know, the why is always there. And but the why is an important why, in that it is a question mark. And over the last number of years, I've come to understand and recognize the importance of the question mark. I speak to many students who come to the synagogue on a tour of the synagogue. Mm-hmm. We don't necessarily do much of a tour of the building itself, so much as we do a tour of Judaism.
Okay.
And its roots and what we stand for, who we are, how we connect into the rest of society, which I find very helpful and something that's really important and near and dear to me. And one of the things that has come from that is the realization that most students that I encounter from the high schools and so forth are, they don't ask a lot of questions, or they didn't ask a lot of questions. And it occurs to me that if you don't question everything, you're going to be used, abused, and railroaded.
Yes.
And to me, that maybe represents the root, not just so much the root cause of what might have happened, although it is in many respects, but also the root element of how to resolve that issue. In other words, I come from a culture and a faith that talks on the basis of questions. We're supposed to question everything. Mm-hmm. It's never stopping. It never ends. We're supposed to do that over and over and go deeper and deeper. I think that many of us over the generations have been brought up with the culture of do as I say.
Exactly.
Because I said so.
Yeah.
Just because.
Yeah.
That's the way it is. Accept it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that is a tragic mistake that we have mm-hmm. made. It's the flaw for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so if we could now start to break that cycle and start to help teach our children, both in school and at home, to question. The problem is, it's not good enough to say, ask questions. You have to question everything. Because if you're not a part of that concept or that way of looking at the world, you don't even know what questions to ask or how to ask them.
Very true.
And this becomes even more... This resonates even more with me when I think about that beyond just Holocaust, beyond just Judaism or anti-Semitism mm-hmm. or
of
any
course.
Other form of racism. Because I now look at the internet. And if you are a child of the internet, where you can go to who I like
Wikipedia?
To refer fondly. Well, yeah, and I fondly refer to Rabbi Google.
No. yeah.
But the point is, who is teaching these children how to discern what's the truth and what isn't
exactly.
from what they're being taught?
Right.
Therein lies the problem. And our reality is that we have a tendency to be lazy. And I don't mean that we don't work a full day or that we can't be bothered to put our all into it. I mean lazy is when someone says, this is what happens, and everybody else says, oh, that's terrible, and they accept it, and then they just go along with it.
Right.
That is the lazy man's way out. And we're all guilty of it. We have to stop doing that.
We need to teach our children not to be so accepting of information.
You betcha.
Yeah, I totally agree. Okay. And when we talk about asking questions, that takes me back, actually, to what you talked about earlier about your grandparents, was it? Anglicizing their names.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, this was very common for anyone coming to the new world, so to speak, from Europe, was the anglicization of names in order to fit in.
Right.
In order to feel comfortable, in order to feel that, in order to gain opportunity, because racism has always been around of some sort, prejudice has always been around of some sort, and you know, it's still happening.
But you know what, Mona? I understand. I understand completely.
Of course.
I get it. Makes perfect sense. I don't condone it.
Right.
But we can understand it. We can accept that aspect of it. And then we can learn and teach that, you know, the 21st century, you know what? I think it's time that we can get beyond that.
Yeah.
A simple example was growing up in school and learning and being taught the importance of tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking when I learned that concept, wow, isn't this great? I've become a better person because I now know how to tolerate.
Yes.
Wow. And the pride I felt,
yeah.
I felt that I was a tolerant human being.
And you were willing to put up with anyone who was different,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Until one day somebody taught me the meaning of respect and how bad I felt.
Yeah.
For having accepted
tolerance
so easily and so quickly the concept of tolerance without really analyzing and appreciating it.
I'm just in awe that we're on the same page about that word.
Well, yeah. It's true.
It's true.
And when someone does teach you mm-hmm. what respect means, it's transformational, right? I believe that questioning everything can be and is transformational. For me, my faith, Judaism, but it's more than a faith. You understand that that's the issue. It's not so easy to identify what Judaism is. Jews are more like a family than anything else, I guess. That's what famous Rabbi Edin Stein said.
Why is that?
For a number of reasons. First of all, if you go back historically, remember, we're living in a predominantly Christian society,
mm-hmm.
and it continues to be so for the time being, although it's becoming much more diverse. And in a predominantly Christian society, you will see things from a Christian perspective. It's good sometimes to look at that and understand it and analyze it. A, it will strengthen you in your faith, but it'll also give you a greater appreciation of other faith.
Mm-hmm.
So Christians are from wherever they come, but they come with a common belief of, I was going to say Jesus, but not really Jesus, of Christ and of the Christ concept, of the mm-hmm. acceptance of Christ into mm-hmm. your heart. So you can be from any country, any nation, accepting Christ. That makes you Christian.
Right.
Jews were a nation of people first,
yes.
starting as a family that became a large number of tribes that became a nation of people who then accepted a covenant and a set of rules and regulations and within their history and a way of life. So it's not just the one, it's the other as well. And so from one perspective, as I was taught recently by one of my teachers, Torah can be seen as the operational definition of Judaism. That would be the secular understanding, the ideal of how to live in community well. And religion can be seen in context of how to relate to and pray to the deity, to God.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So if I get objective for a moment, those of you who are two, we understand. And we embody both of those aspects. That's all Judaism. And we're a group, we're a family of people. I mean, it's not just an ethnic culture, because we're not that, we're so diverse. But we are a family. And how I define that is from a book by the chief rabbi, Lord Jonathan Sacks of the British Commonwealth, one of the people I admire greatly. Mm-hmm. And he wrote a book, and in his book he told the story of being in New York, visiting New York, and going for a weekend up to the Catskills. And it was before the Sabbath in the afternoon, on a Friday afternoon. They were driving up, and on the way up, there was a car pulled over to the side with a flat tire. Obviously, the guy was had a problem, and he was wearing a kippah. He was wearing a head covering, which obviously meant that he was Jewish. They immediately pulled over to help him. It's a fellow Jew. You help him. So they did. And they helped him change the tire. He didn't have a jack. So they had the jack, and they were able to make it work. After they were finished, they wished him well on his trip. And as the chief rabbi turned to leave to go back to his car, he watched the guy take his kippah off and put it in his pocket. And he thought, well, that's... He was just curious. So he went back to the gentleman and said, I don't understand why you took off... You're wearing a kippah. Why did you take it off? And he said, well, I'm not Jewish. And he said, well, why would you wear a kippah if you're not Jewish? He said, well, I know that if another Jew sees a Jew in trouble, he'll stop for him. So I carry a kippah with me. That's the story. And that's what happened.
Okay.
Very interesting.
So the moral of that story is?
Well, we're all family. So when a member of the family is in trouble, you stop and help them.
Okay.
I would like to think that we can all learn that in terms of taking respect to the next level. Mm-hmm. And so now we're talking community. And now I think we should look at common unity in community.
Yes.
Which takes us beyond respect.
Yeah.
Even. So that's our next turning, perhaps.
Wow.
But we only get there by hearing these stories, by questioning our own beliefs, right. ourselves, right. and not being afraid to do so.
And when you talk about knowledge and asking questions, there comes a point, going back to the Holocaust, where I mentioned that I had kept reading and reading and reading all through my older teenage years and into my early 20s, every book I could get my hands on. And it got to a point one day where I looked at a book and I thought, I can't read anymore. I have enough knowledge. I can't do this anymore. It's too much.
My brain hurts
because it was so horrific, the horrificness of it all. It got to a point where I realized, okay, horrible things have happened. I know it now. I can't do it anymore. Now what do I do? Where do I go now? How do I handle this? And this is something that was actually taking place in a thread on Facebook this morning or yesterday after work, I forget, where someone was talking about being angry. Some young person asked a friend of mine who's a social advocate, should I have been, I'm feeling angry about racism or something that she had encountered. Should I have been angry? And I don't know if I should be angry or not. And, my response on the thread was, I've had to fight to control my anger all of my life so that I didn't use it in a way that would push people away. I've had to learn to take my anger against any injustice and temper my temper so that I can actually be of use and can be an advocate and to work with, educating people and creating an environment where I've created some kind of a relationship with people who need that education, the people I'm angry with, so that they will hear me and they will listen to me. And I think I'm going off track here, but that was something that was really important to me.
Let me pick up on
it's
that.
Please do. Yeah.
Okay, so Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel, may he be at peace, another favorite rabbi of mine, wrote that God is not waiting for a leap of faith. God is waiting for a leap of action.
Yes, take action.
Okay, take action. Yeah. And he wrote that and spoke in the same vein about being responsible. Freedom and liberty is about responsibility. Again, Rabbi Sacks reiterates that when he says that when we talk about freedom, it is not the freedom to do whatever you want. That's anarchy. Yes. It is the freedom to do what you ought to do. So with freedom comes responsibility. And that means that you have to question these realities. Right. And so when you look at being responsible, you need to be able to respond to be response-able, if you see what I mean.
Okay? That's very good.
It's a critical reality. And the only way you're able to respond is to ask those questions and not be frightened of them. Mm-hmm. The only way you're able to respond is not to go to the place of, well, there must have been a reason for it, so I guess they had a cause, they had a reason to treat people this way.
Right.
In other words, that enters the world of willful blindness. Mm-hmm. How many times do the whistleblowers get beat up when they're trying to bring the reality of life and people just don't want to see it?
Right.
We have to stop doing that.
It's
we have to support our whistleblowers.
It's hard work.
Yeah, exactly.
And people don't want to work hard. Maybe for a short time,
But then they want to, you know, like, I want to go back to my life of...
Well, and you know what? Somebody said to me that, just that word, exactly that. I was having this conversation, and one of the students said, but this is hard. I don't even know where to start. And I said, perfect, you just started.
Right.
That's where you start. Right. And it is hard. It's hard only if you have an expectation of results,
right,
that you have to have the solution and the conclusion. The mistake that we all make is that we all have to have answers to our questions. And you know what? For some questions, there simply are no answers.
Mm-hmm.
Still, you must keep asking the question. That's how you grow and learn and become deeper in relationship to life and to the divine and to your, whatever, however that belief system works for you, or your ideology of community, whatever.
Right. I think that's a wonderful way to close our show. We have appreciated you being here so very much, Rabbi Parnes. And you're welcome to come back. We would love to have you back at some time.
Thank you. You're welcome.
It's been a wonderful show, so thank you.
Thank you.
And now I'd like to just, I have one announcement to make before we go, and that is Tuesday, May 15th, at starting at 5 p.m., Amnesty International is having our annual steak night fundraising. You can help the human rights work the Regina Amnesty International Community Group undertakes by supporting the steak night fundraiser. Tickets are $25 and include a 6-ounce sirloin steak, Caesar salad, hand-cut fries, garlic toast, and a 12-ounce Bushwhacker beer or a house-made, homemade veggie burger, hand-cut fries, and Caesar salad. If you want tickets, get in touch with Jim or I, and I'll turn it over to you, Jim.
Thank you, Mona. And thank you, Rabbi.
You're most welcome.
Wonderful to have you here. And as we close this week's Human Rights Radio on CJTR Community Radio, we hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. For info on past and upcoming shows with links to human rights actions and information, go to amnestysaskatchewan.ca. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."